Welcome back to another episode of the Reseller's Mindset Podcast. My name is Mike, also known as a used book guy on YouTube, along with my friend and fellow full-time reseller, Johnny B. We help people start and grow their reselling businesses from the ground up. We also have a weekly Zoom call and private Discord for all YouTube members. Head on over to youtube.com/usedbookguy to join the channel and gain access to the full-length podcast, Zoom call, and private Discord today. Let's get into this week's episode.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Reseller's Mindset Podcast. First time we've had a guest on in a long, long time. Listen, me and Johnny get caught up with our own thoughts. And not a lot of people, you know, it's not like everybody's knocking down our doors to come on the podcast, right? So we got Max next to us today. I'm curious because I don't know all of Max's backstory from when he started. He has been a member of my group, full disclosure. I won't take credit for everything. I won't take credit for anything that he's done. So Max is going to introduce himself, kind of tell you what he does, how he's got to where he's at. So what's up, Max? Thanks for hanging out with us today.
Yeah, it's no problem. If you want the fun story, I can tell you that I got into it because I originally volunteered at a library before. When I was in high school, you had to volunteer to get a scholarship for college, and I started an eBay store for them. And I'm gonna be honest, I don't like selling books on eBay still. No offense to you, Johnny, but it got me into the book business, and I left that volunteer position, and I saw some guy at a thrift store scanning. I didn't ask him anything. I kind of just saw it and thought it was look cool, so I figured out his entire business, and I did that.
So let's get the craziness out of the way. She's just not some random guy we drug on the podcast. I need two things from you: your age and the last 30 days in sales you've done on Amazon selling media. Doesn't have to be exact. You don't need to be exact, even though I know you're
pulling. I want to the penny, Max. To the penny.
Oh my god.
To the penny. Okay. Well, I'm 76 years old, and my sales numbers for the last 30 days are $75,365.38.
38 cents, man.
it's pretty funny because like we kind of rag on Max on our calls because like he's the youngest. We don't even need his exact age. Most of us are like we're all in our late 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and we're looking at this kid and he's like, yeah, I'm just doing 75k a month, and we're like, yeah, here I am in the struggle boat doing like 17k a month, and he's just like, I'm just over here chilling.
And that's a very good point. I like our age bracket. We hardly see sub 30 or younger people. It just, I don't know what the reason is. They're trying a bunch of things. Maybe they're still in college and they haven't gone through the misery of working their full-time job. It hasn't eaten at them away for the past 10 years or so, and they're trying to look for something else. So it actually is a good thing, I think, when we see younger resellers come in. It brings a new kind of energy because even me and Mike, we get worn down from time to time, and the younger guys seem to be a little bit more enthusiastic, which makes us more enthusiastic by just being around them. So Max, was reselling and where you started the library your first quote unquote job, or did you do things before the scholarship leading into reselling stuff?
Yeah, so I sold on Mercari. I sold video games before when I was at 13. When COVID started, I started buying up video games, and then my dad said, if they're so valuable, why don't you sell them? So I started just picking up Mercari video game lots and then selling them. And then I was going to actually go onto that library position, just doing basic book circulation, put stuff on the shelves. But then I saw the eBay store and I said, that's pretty cool. I've done stuff like that. So I did that. So I got introduced to it younger than just the library position, but that's really what got me into books. Less so much DVDs. I did see some DVDs, but that's really what got me into it and got me interested in it. And on another note, the younger people, they're close and far between, I'd say, because I found plenty of people who want to sell at my age or younger, and they don't have the attention span. I've gotten some people, some scanners before, and they go in and they drive 40 minutes to a bookstore. They scan one rack of books shelves, and then they watch a TikTok, and then they scan a book, and then watch another TikTok. And it's next thing you know, 2 hours goes by and they've scanned maybe another rack.
You start watching TikTok, Mike. So, all right. So we've been reselling since we were 13 years old, teenage years and onward. So do you do this? I'm going to guess you do this full time, though I'm not 100% sure. Neither is our audience here.
Yeah, I have other jobs as well. This is probably something I spend the majority share of my time on. You could consider it full time, but I also have like two other jobs in college on the side of this as well.
Two other jobs in college. So, two jobs, college, a full-time reselling business. We're going to call you a marathon man, because that's a lot. You're making a lot of money. Do you see college as necessary?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought because there's 100% a route where I can go and I could just continue reselling on and on and it would provide me that value. But if it was some sort of stupid major, let's say gender studies or something that doesn't have application, I would completely agree and say, yeah, just dropping it right away, it wouldn't have any value. But I'm studying construction and I wanna work in construction longer term, in construction management specifically, and I see that there might be greater value in some of the services offered compared to reselling. So it's an economical thought of trying to maximize the value of your time. And in my current plan I believe that is higher right now. Of course, that can change. If I hit $100,000 a month, I'll let you know.
Sure.
But
And no, and that's a great adjacent that just helps your business as well. Because I can't tell you how many do-it-yourself projects I've had to construct for my reselling business, whether it's building up a shelving rack or figuring out a layout or blueprint of the space I have and trying to reverse engineer how do I get the most things in here? So I think that's a great skill set to tack on, especially going the college route. So, construction, are you looking to build like mini malls or overpasses, houses? What are you looking to do in the construction realm?
Something that I got offered is I got an offer from a construction firm to work for them, and they'd offer me some sort of ownership stake in the future. They work in primarily in renovations, but newer home construction is something that I really enjoy. I love building buildings and seeing just progress and systems being made. It's just something that I find joy from. I can see it in my own business as well because I like building systems and I like building programs that other people can subscribe to in it. It's noticeable, you know?
All right, last question before I let Mike have you again. So, are you putting any money away or are you just plowing it into your three businesses here?
Yeah, I'm setting some money aside. I have I'm setting aside a decent paycheck, just a good bit of money. It's in the thousands, but I'm setting it aside. I want to buy a house in the future when I move up to college because I'm currently at my hometown right now, but I'm gonna have to move up in about a year, so I'm trying to do something interesting and trying to almost put my business more on a cruise control overall. Of course, I'm still putting plenty of love into it, but being able to operate it with people doing a majority stake of the day-to-day is my ideal plan for at least reselling.
All right, so everybody's like, yeah, cool. His kid's doing 75K. I am going to throw the asterisk out there that he has a business model where he's not like me, where he just goes by himself. Sure, he does go out by himself. Every single time I see him, he's in his car leaving a thrift store. But he has a business model where he co-signs other Amazon sellers to sell items that they cannot. So if you're not familiar with Amazon, you start selling on Amazon, you start selling used books, right? And then you got to get ungated to sell CDs. You got to get ungated to sell DVDs. Well, you get ungated in that category. And even within the book category, there are brands you are still gated in, right? So the big one that came down this year was Universal. Sony's been gated forever. Disney's been gated forever. So he decided, hey, I can sell these brands. Now, why can he sell them? It's the same reason I believe I can sell them. It's based on sell-through and volume on Amazon land. In his case, he did have to get invoices to be able to sell these brands, but he knocked it out right away. So the idea is I'm still outsourcing and I come across a Criterion Collection DVD and I can't sell it because I'm gated. Well, I send it to him and he sells it for you and you split the profits 50-50. So a lot of people in Amazon land, everybody was waiting for the Disney gate to come down, the Sony gate to come down. Then Universal happened and everybody winds up with a huge pile of stuff they can't sell. So what are you going to do? If you send it to the buyback companies, they give you basically nothing. So he said, all right, I see an opportunity in the market. Why don't I just take people's stuff, build out the processes and the system so that when he sells Mike the Used Book Guy's DVD, he can say, all right, I owe him $6.25, sends it to them, gets paid. So give a little bit of insight on why you decided to start that business and how much of your business is your consignment versus the stuff you source yourself.
Okay, well, I can tell you that I know that when I started selling off the bat, I had a bunch of items gated, and it's not something I think is particularly enjoyable for any sellers. and especially in the context of items that you could see as valuable and having to turn away greens, because I know you're chasing that high when you're scanning, and if you have to turn something that's good away, it's really just as it can be heartbreaking sometimes, at least in my opinion. And I know that if you put hundreds of dollars into gates, you could be tying up your money in more inventory, which could give you an even greater return in the end. And I believe that consignment is a good way of just simply monetizing that and getting more use of your money and buying more cheap inventory versus buying a 500 or 100 discs of something that you probably don't care about, like the minions. And right now in my own business, I can tell you that about 40% of my inventory is consignment and 60% is my own stuff. I've been letting that grow, especially more in recent times as I've been trying to get it more self-sufficient, but that seems to be the golden number right now.
I like the idea of consignment. It sounds glorious, right? Because everybody's like, Mike, why didn't you just do what Max did? And I say, Max, good luck with all the headaches that are coming your way. And I'm sure he deals with these from time to time. He's only been doing this for a few months, but I mean, if you just look at it from an overall perspective, right? He's selling tens of thousands of dollars of other people's stuff. And I know the headaches that will eventually arise with this. I mean, he's just started this whole business model of consigning, and it's sure, he's been on Avery's channel and my group of a couple hundred people, but I know people are consistently sending him. And I just know that the work and the infrastructure that comes with it just doesn't appeal to me, right? It's the same thing Johnny does with eBay. It doesn't appeal to me in any way, shape, or form. So I don't have a problem with it. It's kind of cool to see that you still actually, get out there and bust your ass in the trenches yourself. You're not just relying on the consignment and taking the full lazy route. That's what I, if I'm going consignment, I'm never leaving the house again, dude. I'm open it, and if the sun's too shiny, I gotta like reach out and grab the box and get sizzled up by the sun to pull it inside.
I mean, that's pretty much it, man. Okay. I'm gonna ask you some fun questions here, Max. You don't have to answer them. Do you have employees?
Yes, I have employees.
Okay. How many employees do you have, my good sir?
Well, it depends on what you consider an employee. If you're talking about independent contractors, I have plenty. If you're talking about employees, I have three right now.
Okay. Well, we'll call them full time and part time. So three full time. How many part time?
It's above a reasonable amount. I'm
Above a reasonable amount.
almost to double digits right now. I have some people that come in and then they wash out. So having a real count of good people, it can vary, but it's almost near double digits of people who are actually decent.
Gotcha. So we probably got people listening and they're screaming at the top of their heads. That's so much overhead. Can you talk a little bit on how their pay structure?
Yeah, so how I go about it is what I do is I offer them their cost of goods, so they'll get a debit card. So I have to have pretty good trust with them to set it up. And then I give them a scanner and I make sure that they do a damn good job. And they'll get a 50-50 consignment cut after the cogs are deducted. And bad inventory that they buy will be just deducted from their pay. So if they buy something that's completely water damaged or completely unreasonable, that gets deducted out. But that's how I pay them through. And I use the same consignment ex infrastructure I have for all of that. I actually started off with my employee infrastructure, and that's when I jumped over to consignment. I have the database set up, so it's like, why not use it in more applications than one, you know?
Right, absolutely. So we're numbers oriented here. So we said 75K. After all your overhead and your cost of goods, how much of that do you think you clear?
I clear not throwing it back into inventory. It probably is in the range of 10 to
Bef
15.
before you do another purchase for more inventory, sure.
Before I do another purchase for more inventory, about 10 to 15 is my number.
That's
I
still
throw
a really
a, I throw
good
a
amount.
lot into inventory because I like growing, and I know one of the biggest metrics I use, and you can use yourself, is if you go into GoToLister, or I know specifically GoToLister has it, is if you go to the computer version and go to the homepage, you're able to see over a period of time how many items you've listed and sold. And just keep making sure that item listed count is higher than your item sold. Like right now, usually on average, I'm about 1.5 times in the last 30 days of what I sell. So I'm still growing by that rate.
Excellent. And thank you for being honest with your numbers. People love it when people are honest with their numbers. That's really good math. For those who are saying it's not, you're wrong. it's really good numbers. So on that, have we plateaued yet, or are we still on an upward trend?
Yeah, so I'm still growing right now. Last month, I can tell you that I cleared $70,000 of revenue, and this month I'm on track to project about 78 or 80, and that's still a little bit of growth. It's not as fast as some of my previous growth months. If I look at my last 12 months, I was exponential between 20 and 70, and now I'm still growing. It's not as fast. I think one of the reasons is there was a really big book sale that I hit. And I jumped 6,000 items. I think Johnny saw it before.
I did.
We hauled in 6,000 books from this book sale that we bought. It was a humongous book sale. But right now I used to go send in double what I'd sell, and now I'm at one and a half of what I sell. So I'm going to reach that plateau point soon, but it's probably not going to be before $100,000 a month of revenue.
Gotcha. And when you do hit that point, some place down the road, are you going to just get more staff to grow more again, or are you just going to you're going to stack cash for a minute?
Yeah, well, there's two ways to think about it. There's two ways that I acquire inventory. It's either through consignment or actually paying for it. So I can grow endlessly with what I consign because technically I'm not paying for the items.
Right.
And I mean, you've probably seen that as well. You're not at the bins, you're not paying 69 cents a pound for each item. So it's easier to grow when you're not paying for the inventory. It definitely is helpful. And in that avenue, that's what I want to expand on further. Of course, my time is not going to be stuck on cherry picking forever because, I'm studying stuff and whatnot, and it's just trying to set the proper balance. Because, yes, I could go and cherry pick, and I only cherry pick probably a couple days a week, a few days a week at most right now. And I could very easily cherry pick more if I wanted to, but I'd rather focus more on consignment and making sure my backlog doesn't get too far behind.
Right. I know you're a busy guy. So on the reselling business aspect only, how many hours a week are you pumping into it?
Right now, I probably push full time, if not 30 to 50 hours, usually on a week. I don't usually push more, but something that I do is I don't actually keep track too well. It's kind of hard to set a number on it, especially when you're thinking about it, because that also should be counted, but I don't even think about it sometimes. I go to sleep thinking about go-to listers sometimes.
Nice. So we got 30 to 50 hours there. So job B, how many hours there?
Some other jobs, they're definitely a lot less hours. One of my other jobs is I'm a realtor. I probably spend maybe 5 or 6 hours a week, and I have to work with clients to help them do whatever. And my other job on top of that's just some fun property management stuff, and that's probably 3 or 4 more hours a week.
All right, we'll just call it 10. So we're at 60 hours. Then we got good old college. How many hours are we pumping into college?
I'm gonna be honest, it's probably 5, 10 hours a week at most. I
All right.
don't think it's much more than that. I know I'm online school, and online school nowadays is a lot easier than actual college. Some of the stuff I do is definitely cutting corners, you could say, but classes that I take include business management and entrepreneurship, and I'm gonna be honest with you, I've learned more from not that class than taking the class.
Yeah. All right, so we're at 70 hours a week between reselling job A and B and college. And do you have free time, sir, or you just eat and sleep and work?
In terms of free time, I mean, it can be occasional. I'll go out and do an escape room every other week. I
Okay.
don't take too much free time for myself. I want to take more free time, definitely. I think with more consignment as time goes on, I think my biggest time sink is just going out and cherry picking, and I think that's most people's time sink. It's going out and cherry picking items, finding the good stuff. And that's definitely what I'm spending the most time in, just making sure that I'm completely backlogged at all times.
Cool. Very cool. So yeah, Mike, you doing 50 hours in your business over
I try not to work more than 5 hours a week. All right.
there?
Once I get close to double digits, 10 hours, my body starts shutting down. I don't have the 13-year-old max hustle lifestyle inside this body no more. But I mean, I make what I make, and I'm curious, Max. You got to choose. book CDs or DVDs, you can only sell one of them.
Yeah, that question has rolled through my mind plenty. That's probably counted for 20 of the hours a week of the calculation there. The thing about it is there's pros and cons for all of them. And I can tell you that I'd probably be between either books or probably DVDs, in my opinion. I can tell you why. The benefit of books is the cap on the highest priced book is definitely a lot higher than that of the highest priced DVD. 100%. You'll see $100, $500, even $1,000 books or book sets, but you won't ever see a $500 DVD set. So there's a benefit there, but that also comes at the cost of extra weight and storage costs. And for that reason, books take up more space, and they have to, and you have to be more conservative about them. But DVDs, you can almost see it more of a volume game. Of course, the maximum price is lower, but the average value that you get because it weighs less is more viable, and you can take a lot more and make more money, as not even mentioning how bulk is profitable in that case. I know some people do book gaylords, but they have to be really, really good book bulk in order for it to be viable. Like you have to be pulling out library sale quality every single time for it to be able to pay off, unless you're getting the things for free.
I would go DVDs for those wondering.
Well, we know what you would do, Mike.
I do have to press the concern though that gates are getting quite high for DVDs.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that there's 100 unit gates for almost every brand now. Of course, they'll get on ungated with time, but it can be a lot more daunting now, so the barriers to entry is a lot higher. And I'm not even talking about the whole disc repair situation where you have to fix them and you have to have full machines to be able to fix that stuff.
So on the note of CDs, and there's a reason I stepped out of disc media, and I recall it mainly being because of CDs. They are the fragilest things in the world. There's money in it. There's always money in it, but it's a lot of work when you're dealing with CDs, between case swaps, and you got the same thing you got to do with the DVDs. You got to clean them a lot of the time or resurface them. So have you thought about not doing CDs?
That's a really good question to raise.
Because
I
you can
can
do
tell
more
you.
DVDs and more books if you cut the CDs.
Yeah, that's interesting because I didn't talk about CDs and their pros and cons, but CDs are the DVD's little brother. And I think not getting rid of CDs entirely is the play because there's still value to be made in CDs. Even if you have an employee going out and doing it, it'll still make your value back 2x or 3x. I know that there's work with it, and all you can do is. The biggest issues for maintenance is just disc repair and case replacements. That's what we've said here, and that's definitely the biggest hurdles. And what you can do is you can almost tier your trigger set. So if you're getting a low dollar item, you could just completely opt out of the case replacement, either be a bit meaner and send in the bad case, or just not send it in at all, and reduce your workload directly related to the amount of profit that's involved in each item, almost like anything you could say.
So up the margin on CDs would probably be the better play, you're
Up the
saying?
margin on CDs that require more work is definitely the better thought to have. Because if you have a mint CD that goes for what, $15, that'll be more than fine. You don't want to jump around too much with it. You don't want to throw it out if it's just as much work as a DVD or a book even.
I would the used book guy, here I go. I would take CDs over books. Books are now at the bottom of the list. What I started
Mike, you're
with,
not on brand. You're not on brand, Mike.
I am way off brand. I have evolved into the not used book guy if I had a choice, but I don't have a choice. And usually the benefit of these three things is they all exist in the same spot, right? It's not like we're going way out of our way for one of the three categories or whatever it may be. But I do agree the CDs suck. You always got to replace the stupid front cover on these things. It's never nothing else. So I buy the new cases. And then I just wind up swapping this and throwing out the back one. But I still think, I don't know. I mean, as we continue to go down this path on Amazon, like what's your outlook on Amazon as a viable business model when it comes to being banned and gates and how tough it's gotten so far in the past year for new sellers in the media space?
I think 100% that it is a lot harder to enter the field in now compared to a year ago. I think that's completely undeniable, especially with all the gates and requiring hundreds of dollars just to be broken down. But I think the best thought thought you can have is that means if it's only getting harder as time goes on, the best time to try it would be now. And trying it even a day later, another gate could come up. Let's say Criterion throws up a gate for 100 units. So, therefore, to get the best advantage, it would be to try now. And if it doesn't work out for you, that's fine. And if you're talking about the actual long term of the business, there's risk involved, yes. And it's just either building and diversifying your business away from being solely Amazon or simply playing your cards right and reducing your risk in actually getting to that point. So, spending more time on quality assurance or any other venture to prevent risk from going on, like not selling textbooks, is totally viable if you want to have something foreseeable for the future.
So what are some things that, if there is anything, that you won't sell on Amazon because you feel like it wakes up the Grim Reaper?
I can tell you that there's people who have lists of stuff that they feel aren't great to sell, and for the most part, I will break those rules sometimes. I'll still sell textbooks if they come up clear on the Books Run counterfeit checker. I will sell Beachbody. There's a few brands I'm superstitious about, but I think every Amazon seller has superstitions. I'm gonna be honest with you, I would never want to sell Elf on the Shelf. I have a feeling that Elf on the Shelf is just one of those IPs waiting to happen. But some stuff that I won't sell is stuff that might qu come off as such, so I won't sell in the DVD world the purple discs that are even the archive films. I won't sell them on my own ventures, even though I might have the account help to protect myself from inauthenticity warnings. I just don't want the risk that's involved with those. And I won't sell obvious ones like Dogma or The Chosen that we've seen plenty before. If there's clear awareness and evidence that there's risk in selling an exact item, I probably won't sell it. Of course, I know that you guys are a little bit more Puritan on textbooks and all that.
I've sold The Chosen brand new, probably within the last 2 months.
Really? I know
I'm
people
the
have
only
had
Puritan here.
YOLO, baby. Go down shooting.
I know people have gotten fun cease and desist letters from the Chosen people. But I mean, you can even still get by with that. There's a tolerance. It's like you're a teenage kid and you're just trying to break the rules and see how far you can go. And I mean, I think we're all in that exact boat, I included.
So, CDs, DVDs, and books. You sell anything else on Amazon?
Yeah, I mean, I'll sell the usual cassette tape. If it's a good rule of thumb for those is if it's somebody my age would be able to identify, then it's probably going to be good. I do that, and I don't play around with much else. I would love to joke around and say I play in the VHS game, but that would be a lie.
What about video games?
I do video games as well.
Okay.
I don't go too heavily in it because my sources don't provide that many of them. I
Sure.
do come across video games, and I have the buy box for video
I used
games,
to
and I'll.
find them mixed in with the DVDs all the time.
I know some people who do Facebook pickups, they'll come by and they say, "Ooh, I'll find video games in this DVD lot." I don't think those days are here anymore. The bigger issue with video games is they've gotten a lot more of a critical appeal now, and everyone now knows what the value of Earthbound is, and all the valuable games are all well known now. So it's a lot harder to find video games than what it was before I was in Amazon.
Yeah, just like you could find Guitar Hero guitars, the Benz, once upon a time. Not no more. Okay. Do you sell anywhere else besides Amazon? You do
Right.
eBay?
I don't do too much eBay. I do a little bit, not an incredible amount. I've sent Johnny a consignment box, a few of them at that.
Yes.
And I don't focus too greatly on eBay or other ventures. I've solely been putting a lot of effort into Amazon because it provides the best value. Of course, there's that risk there, but if all fails, I have other jobs and I have other ventures to fall down on, and that's the diversification that's really important to follow through on.
All right, last question before I let Mike have you here. What is the biggest lesson you've learned? And I know you've only been doing this for a short minute, but well, since 13, I guess. What's the biggest lesson we've learned from 13 to now?
Well, I can tell you probably the best lesson is to, ooh, that's a good question, would be to simply just do it and don't trust everybody, because everybody can give you the best results, but you have to find the right people, and almost like finding friend groups in middle school or elementary school or high school. You got to find the right people, and if you're surrounded by the right people, then you'll get sent to the right places.
That is really good advice.
All right, I need you to defend what you said two questions ago. You stated that Amazon is the best platform to sell media on.
Okay.
Defend yourself. What about all the eBay sellers like Johnny? Why do you prefer
Well,
Amazon over everywhere else? Why do you think it's the best
I
one
do
over?
sell on Amazon, guys. I'm
I
just
know.
saying. Well, I mean, the benefit of Amazon is you have, at least in the FBA program, is there's the amazing sell-through that a lot of other platforms don't see, and then there's also the premium that Amazon can give for a lot of listings, sometimes really unbearably high bumps and premiums, but that benefit itself, it pays itself off, the fact that you can just continue to scale endlessly, because I know a lot of eBay sellers or a lot of FBM sellers, merchant fulfilled sellers, they get limited by either space or manpower and time. Like, for example, merchant fulfilled sellers, they might not be able to hold more than 3,000 books, and they'd be limited at that rate and sell through. So they have to be profitable at that point to stay in business, which a lot of times many sellers won't be able to. If your space is really cheap, then you're a lot better off. But the fulfilled by Amazon model is a lot better in that way, because you can scale almost endlessly, because you're completely outsourcing the shipping process of it, and that's almost half the job.
And you can, when Amazon does ban you, because everybody on the internet says you're going to get banned on Amazon, all of us will, right? You can actually clip this podcast and send them, and you can be like, "Look, guys, I'm trying to promote your service out here to the people, right?" Then maybe they'll let you back into selling the platform. But I do think you're correct. Oh, how many pieces of inventory do you have currently at Amazon?
Last check I had over 27,000 items.
Sheesh.
I can tell you that it goes up by about 2,500 items a month, and it's still growing right now. And the whole thought process and theory is, eventually, the items that you send in, if it's at a constant similar rate, is you'll eventually catch up, and you'll sell as many as you send in, because your sell through rate will stay approximately constant, and you'll pull the same amount out as you send in. And that's equilibrium, and that would be hypothetically the most profitable point, because you're only paying enough inventory to replenish what you currently sell. And that's the best point to be at in any business. So if you're growing, it's going to cost you more money than not. I can tell you that I throw way more money in than I get out of it a lot of times, because I'm buying up more inventory than I reasonably need to maintain. Like, I sell, what, 5,000 items, which is about a 20-24% sell-through rate a month, which is about average for people in the media scene. And I send in more than that. If you add the new active inventory after that, that means I send in 7,500. You can then almost project your revenue with that. So if you just multiply that send in by your average sales price, you'll get your expected revenue, which is higher.
I got a crazy idea for you. It just came to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You should have something like where the top co-signee with you at the end of the year gets, like, I don't know, send them a fruit basket or something, a box of chocolates, or like it. Or what about, like, are there employee incentives? Like, say if I'm your best employee, besides you paying me more money because I'm making, I'm out there sourcing more, like, do you offer your employees incentives?
I'll be just like you, and I'll go take your fans out to mini golf.
There you go. It's funny, true story. I met up with somebody in the group. We went mini golf. They had two courses, and he's like, "Nobody ever lets me pay." All right, in my defense, everybody's like, "I'll pay, I'll pay, I'll pay." I'm like, "All right, whatever." He pays for the first course, and I'll like, "I'll pay for the second course." Well, since we already played the first course, the second course was half off, so I paid like $5. It was pretty comical. But I do
You
like.
know,
Go ahead.
as long as people aren't leaving reviews on my store saying, "I know what your business is, I see you consigning," I'll be fine. Am I right, or am I right, Mike?
Yeah, it's tough, man. Give me some headaches when it comes to having the amount of employees that you have that you've had to kind of deal with and experience in the past, month or two.
Well, I mean, something you will always realize, you've probably seen it as well, is your employees will never do as good of a job as you, ever. And if you have somebody get remotely to that point, you got to give them an ownership stake, and then give them a in charge in the business, and they probably still won't do it as great as you do. Essentially, probably they might do it better, you never know, but if you're teaching somebody how to do your job, they will only be as good as you are at the job, unless they actually want to seek to learn more, which more often than not, they just want to get paid and they want to get the job done. So probably not. But if you have employees, they're gonna be idiots half the time. You're gonna have to tell them, no, you can't put all the good condition discs. You can't just remove them from the cases and throw them around. And there's plenty of conundrums and drama that has to be made because you have to have other people working.
I'm gonna put you on the hot seat now. So you being on the younger side of the reselling world, what do you think about when you see people complaining that reselling doesn't work and reselling isn't the way it used to be, and they've been reselling for longer than you've been alive, right? Like, because personally, I think to myself, right, the margins we have in this business model, we should be able to save and invest in our futures. And I know no resellers save, nobody's investing, and I'm curious, somebody that's as young as you, like you don't got to, I don't need specifics. I know you consume reselling content, but like, what do you think when you hear somebody that's been saying, I've been reselling for 15 years and this is the worst it's ever been, while you're sitting over here doing $75,000 a month?
Yeah, I could just tell them have they tried looking for improving their business? I mean, the biggest issue that comes involved that many people in the world even have is they just don't adapt and react to changes because yeah, you've been in it for 15 years, but you don't even know what Scoutly is, or you don't even know that Amazon sells stuff. If you're backwards, yeah, you will f see the face of it being the worst in 10 years. It's like being a typewriter salesman in the digital age, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's hard to, because everybody we've had on this podcast is they just knock it out of the park. But for every single person I have on the podcast, like yourself, I see 10 YouTube videos and 10 different resellers saying that reselling is, you can't make money reselling anymore. So that's why I was curious what your whole take on the whole situation is, that you can't make money. Meanwhile, you're over here just like folding bills away, and I'm over here like Patrick Starr with I have $3, and that's all I got to show for myself.
Well,
I
I
mean,
mean,
it's definitely a higher bar, but it's not unprofitable. It's just as profitable. And if you're growing your business, you're growing your business. But
as long as you run the business right, it'll be profitable. I mean, if you're throwing out a 10 grand a month on spaghetti strainers every month, you're probably having an issue.
right, exactly. So, okay, let's talk about sourcing for a minute. Because one of the major things we hear from people is, I can't find anything.
Yeah, so there's plenty of sources out there. The fun thing is, the best way to source is just simply being creative. I can tell you that the best sources that I've ever had is just from being creative. I mean, I source at plenty of places that aren't the average. I don't mind paying up, so I know Mike flaunts the record stores, and I actually haven't been to a record store before, I'm gonna be honest. I've been to sources that charge even more. I've been to one, but they didn't allow resellers. I don't even dip on that one. I'll source at the typical thrift stores. I'll stop in the Goodwills. I'll do your run of the mill, but then local connections is definitely one of the better things to do. If you come off as somebody who will help you, and especially if you offer cash incentive, it helps a lot more. I know there's people who go out and say, "I'll take your books for free." Sure, they'll get some success. If you find people that and you'll say, "Hey, I'll consign your books," they'll be even happier because they'll be getting some money. You just have to make sure that that value is there. And if not that, then tell them you'll buy them Olive Garden or something.
All right. Now the not so fun question. We talked about probably your biggest thing you took away from reselling. What was your biggest mistake you've done in reselling?
The biggest mistake I've done, I've the biggest mistake I've probably made in the Amazon scene of reselling.
Yeah, we'll leave the scope there.
Okay. I think something that happens in general is, at least when you're younger, so one of the mistakes you make is you offer too much in your value proposition sometimes. Because I'll go 20 miles when I only needed to go 1 mile in some cases. So I'll be working at a deal and I'll offer the full 9 yards when they would have really taken the whole 1 yard. And those type of mistakes can be costly. Yeah, it could be a beneficial relationship, but over offering sometimes is not the most beneficial thing. And it can bite you in the end, and that's definitely one of the bigger mistakes that I've made, at least early on. I either overpay employees or I overoffer on lots, or because I feel like I have to satisfy them, but in the end, you're really just trying to get a deal for yourself.
Absolutely, that's a good one. That's something we could all learn from. So do you stay local for your sourcing, or do you hop on a plane or your private jet from time to time?
I can tell you that I usually that 99% of the time I don't source more than an hour of where I live.
An hour from where you live. Okay, so
I'll go to book sales.
you're not going over the Great Divide to find these
I'll go to
materials.
book sales over 2.5 hours away, but I've never sourced past that point. Even when I'm on vacation, I haven't sourced more than that far away.
Gotcha. So let me ask you this, because I know you live in a city, but if you were to live in a small rural town where things are more than likely an hour away, would you change the way you do things?
That's a good question to have. I'd say if I lived in a small town, of course I would focus on building the connections with the people in that small town. I would probably, because you can either go in two ways. You can either widen your grip, or you can tighten what you already have control over, in mafia terms, you could sort of say. And if I was in a smaller town, what I'd do is I'd probably try and work a deal with the library there. I'd probably try and work a deal with the thrift store, because there's probably one or two thrift stores in the
There's at
city.
least an antique mall, at least.
I'd work with those people, I'd work with the storage unit people, and I'd try and be known across that town. And once I have every avenue, I say that with an asterisk because that's really hard to imagine, that's when you would want to start going out further. It's either you go wide or you get a tight grip on one closer area. And I think since I'm in a city, I try and get a tight grip on one good area, and I don't go out further for that reason. And for that reason, that's why I don't travel out so far. I also have people who go out further than me because it's their job to do that. So I try and keep a smaller area and radius. And if I was in a smaller town, I'd probably do that if I was only sourcing like that.
Scale 1 to 10, how worried are you about getting banned on Amazon tonight?
If I was worried, I'd have initial stress. Yeah, I'd probably say I'd be a 5 or a 6. Yeah, it's something that sits in the back of your head, but I mean, and during the Cold War, everyone had a fear of nuclear war, but that doesn't mean that it was going to be realized.
My man, let's make the money today while we can. If we get banned, we get banned. Who cares? You're just gonna go start something else, right? I mean, everybody's listening to this podcast is like, this kid could probably start any other business in the world and be successful. Like I have the same mindset with myself. Like, if worst comes to worst, then I'm out of here, right? Like, I'll just go start something else, and that's all there is to it at the end of the day. It's just, I think a lot of people are afraid to start Amazon because of, oh, I might get banned. I might get banned. Like, when you started Amazon, like, how much were you worried about getting banned? Like, I remember when I started Amazon, like, there wasn't as much content around it, so there wasn't as much noise. So, like, I didn't even think you could get banned on Amazon, right? Kind of like eBay. You need to, like, basically rob somebody to get kicked off the platform. So I was just like, whatever, I didn't care. But I'm curious, when you started, were getting banned, was like that even playing a bigger factor than actually going out and sourcing products?
Well, I can tell you that I tried starting Amazon on two occasions, once in middle school, which I got canceled down because I wasn't 18 and there's an age limit for Amazon. And I got all into all the YouTube content and I got scared away just because of the content alone. And the second time around when I went in for books, I'm going to be honest with you, I barely watch any content. I just simply like tending to my own garden and growing my own farm to see how I can do it. I usually don't look at other people's. I don't look at a lot of other content for that reason. Yeah, there's the content out there, and it's cool. You can see titles, but I don't keep an eye on what other people are doing for the most part. Of course, you'll need it to see developments, and those will pop up. And for the most part, the day-to-day content you'll see is not going to be the most valuable. It's going to be either more of the same, or it's going to be a sales pitch for software, and just being going into it blindly, I think, was a lot better than going into it educated, because the way that you're educated gives you an alternative picture to what might really be the case. Because I can tell you that on my first time around, there was a bunch of doomsday seeking thought about penny undercutting and price crashing. I mean, it is a risk, but it's not a risk that is so large that you have to be worried about it.
Do you penny undercut?
No, I don't in the first 3 months. I know,
So.
I stopped doing that a while ago just because I noticed in my own data that when I stopped penny undercutting, my sell-through dropped about 20%, but my average sales price went up about $2.
You're still not getting off the table here because you still do it after 3 months. So technically you're a part of my gang. So good try trying to weasel your way out and being like nice guy, like, hey guys, I let you get a pass for 3 months, but then I'm tanking everything.
So, you don't consume a lot of content. I'm curious, how did you find Mike over here?
I'm gonna be honest. I was bored and I scrolled around on YouTube. I still see some content, and I'm gonna be honest, I came across his channel by almost pure luck.
Luck. We got Max because of luck, Mike. We need more of that.
What a lucky group of guys we are to have Max rent. They promoted one of my ugly mug YouTube thumbnails. It was probably one of the worst clickbait videos that I made. That's why I make them from time to time, to get people like Max reeled in. And then I can take credit for his whole business because he found my video, even though he started reselling long before he found my
I
video.
ran in I ran into your channel probably about 2 months after I started selling books. And that's also, I can tell you from my sales graph, because I could still see my first few months of sales graphs, that I started to increase a few months afterwards, so there could be some attribution.
I know you said you're sending me checks in the mail. They're lost somewhere in the mail. I get it. They'll show up eventually. I'm not worried about it. So we're going to wrap it up here. Max, he actually still does consignment, right? All of his information will be in the description in the comments section. So if you want to sell on Amazon, or maybe you're the person, I've thought of this too. What about if you don't even have an Amazon account and you just let Max sell it for you, right? So maybe you're the eBay seller, kind of like I do with Johnny. I don't sell on eBay, but I technically kind of sort of do because I send him my stuff to sell on eBay. So I'm like a full, if Johnny's a full-time eBay seller, so am I. I'm just like,
Everybody could be a full-time eBay seller with me.
So if you're interested or you have gated items, Max is the guy for it. He's vetted. He's not just some random guy I found off the street. He's been doing this for months. He'll give you your numbers. He's on every one of our coaching calls, basically, that we have within my group. He's active in the Discord. He's readily available to answer questions. Max, final thoughts on reselling, final thoughts on you overall and your business, where you plan on taking this, and your the consignment opportunities people have, maybe some of the wins that you've had with co-signees.
Well, I can tell you that reselling is definitely a good skill to have. I know majority of people, they won't be able to see it. I can tell you that if I had a number of people on hands who call me a scalper or some other derogatory reseller name, it's definitely a large count, and there's going to be a lot of flack for reselling because some people, they don't have the understanding for it. They'll go and get their doctorate and be a doctor and never resell anything in their entire lives. But just because they don't understand doesn't mean that you can't understand, and therefore that's an important thing to go for. And in my own business, I'm gonna continue consigning and doing good with that, and I'm just now growing it again. I'm opening up resurfacing consignment. There's gonna be more information about that, and you'll be able to get your you'll be able to outsource all your resurfacing too if that's something that you don't ever want to deal with, because I'm gonna be honest, I can't stand a JFJ. A JFJ is evil. The JFJ is the most vile machine I've ever seen. It's dirty. It gets your hands crusty, and it's not something I enjoy.
You
So.
know what? Me and the JFJ, screw all of you. I love my little JFJ. I've had the same one since I started, but I do agree. It's a little messy, but you know what, dude? Sometimes you got to get down and dirty. What is like a, for somebody that can't find it in the description or the comment below, what's a email address or the best way to contact you if they wanted to reach out?
Okay, so my fax page is on the Discord server, but I also have a and I'll give you the link so you can put it into the video below. And I also have a Facebook page of my name as well, Max Dam, MaxDam. I can also give you a link to that, and you can reach out to me either through message or you can reach out to me through Discord. I have more contact information in my fax page and everything you need to know about my consignment program and my new resurfacing program if that's something that interests you. And I'm more than willing to talk to you all because I'm knowledgeable about it, and I've given some advice if you consign with me.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong when you have somebody that's readily available. It's not just, you go and kind of deal with a chat bot or something like that. That's why when you first brought it up to me, I was like, hey, this makes sense, right? Like, you're somebody that's readily available. The same with Johnny, you know, that's why I was telling him to do it. He's readily available. If anybody has any type of question, they literally can reach out to you directly and get an answer within the same day. So, like, that type of service doesn't exist in the reselling world. It's hard to come by with the softwares and the bigger companies. You can't get that type of personable response. So we appreciate you coming on, and we'll probably have you on again probably this time next year. So thanks for hanging out with us this week.
Yeah, it's a pleasure talking around, and I'll be bringing some interesting updates next year.
All right, we'll talk to everybody next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Resellers Mindset Podcast. Today's full episode and all previous episodes are available to all YouTube members, along with the weekly Zoom call and private Discord. Head on over to youtube.com/theusedbookguy and consider joining for as little as $2.99 a month.